really given too many over the years. The last one I gave was at Midtown, and I ended up crying like a little girl. So that didn't go well. And so when Mike said he wanted me to give testimony, I was like, oh, crap. But I just want to take the time to kind of just share a few things with you about our story, our life. Well, the first thing I would say is there's kind of an age-old saying you've heard, and that is you want to start where you are and use what you have and do what you can. Anybody ever heard that before? You want to start where you are, use what you have, and do what you can. And I really say that to you just to kind of warn you against the danger of comparison. You don't ever want to compare. Like 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12, the Apostle Paul says, "For we dare not make ourselves of the number or compare ourselves with some that commend themselves. And measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves are not wise." A lot of themselves in that verse, but I think you get the idea. You can't compare one story to another. You really can't. All you can do is, based upon God's word, is just start where you are, use what you have, and do what you can. It's really the only thing you can do. And I say that because when I was a kid growing up in church, and man, I loved listening to missionaries talk. And a lot of times the mission field can seem, you know, more romantic than it is in real life. And in real life, it's just a battle, just like we're talking about this week. And so I don't want you to do that. The mission field is right here where you live, and you just have to do it where you are. I would say probably the greatest obstacle that we face is, without a doubt, in the city of London. I don't know if it's the same here, but probably the greatest obstacle we face in the city of London would be other believers. They've probably gotten in our way purposely and tried to obstruct God's word and God's work more than any other people group that we've come across. And when we go out to do our soul winning and stuff like that, we come across all kinds of people groups and all types of faiths, all types of belief systems, everything from atheists to Muslims to Buddhists, or, you know, all different kinds of people. And not just on the street, but just in our lives. And most people, I mean, because it's England, most people are, you know, fairly polite, at least to your face. I don't know, maybe Americans tend to be a little bit more blunt or maybe more honest, but Brits are pretty nice to your face, especially if they don't like you. If they don't like you, then they're really, if you're really close, then they'll be mean to you. You know, then they'll be really frank and stuff with you. But if they really don't like you, then they'll be extra polite. And so we haven't had much pushback from most people. But other believers have probably been the greatest obstruction to our work moving forward. And I think that that's probably one of the hardest things. And I think it was... David, he said in Psalm 55, if you want to turn there, Psalm 55, verses 12 through 22. I just want to read this to you. He says here, talking about his own battles, he says, "For it was not my enemy that reproached me." He says, "Then I could have borne it. And neither was it he that hated me that didn't magnify himself against me." He says, "Because then I would have hid myself from him. He says, but it was thou, a man my equal, my guide and my acquaintance. We took sweet counsel together, and we walked unto the house of God in company. And he says, let death seize upon them. Does anybody pray like that? Against your enemies? I just think that's fantastic when you're praying for someone. But he says, let them go down quick into hell, for wickedness is in their dwellings and among them. He says, as for me, I will call upon God, and the Lord shall save me. Evening, morning, and noon will I pray and cry aloud, and he shall hear my voice. He hath delivered my soul in peace from the battle that was against me, for there were many with me. God shall hear and afflict them, even he that abideth of old. Because they have no changes, because they never change, therefore they fear not God. He hath put forth his hand against such as be at peace with him, and hath broken his covenant. The words of his mouth were smoother than butter, but war was in his heart. His words were softer than oil, yet they were drawn swords. And I just think what David says next. He says, cast thy burden upon the Lord, and he shall sustain thee. He shall never suffer the righteous to be moved. But thou, God, shall bring them down into the pit of destruction. And I just think that it's a really important verse. It was an important verse for me many times as we did ministry. Because if it would have been someone who hated us, like David says, I think it would have been easier to bear, you know? But when it's your friend, you know, as he says, when it's someone my equal or my acquaintance, when it's someone that you know, when it's someone that you've invested time in, when it's someone that you've ministered to, that's when it hurts the most. When I started doing all this stuff, I think I was just really naive. When I arrived on the mission field, man, I was just like so bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and I'm just, I don't think I've ever really been bushy-tailed, but I don't know what that is exactly. But I was very bright-eyed, and I was just so excited to be on the mission field, and I just thought, man, we're all on the same team, you know? We all just love Jesus, and we just want to do some work together. And awesome, you know, all of us doing something really great for God. I was just amazed and shocked over the years that you see, you can be at the darkest moment, you know, of your life, you know, and that's when your brother or your sister will walk up to you when you're just in your darkest moment and then just stick a knife right in your heart. And I just blew my mind. And I guess maybe I shouldn't have been amazed by that. Maybe I was just a stupid kid who just didn't know how the world worked. Maybe that's what it was. But it really surprised me. And it's really hurtful. And it was just amazing to me. And another thing that was really caught me off guard about the mission field is that, I was preparing my entire life to go to the mission field. I've been in the ministry formally for 30 years now. But I have been preparing for this since my mom shot me out, right? And I like came out with a suit and a Bible in my hand. You know? I can remember when I was about, one of my grandmothers grew up Nazarene, right? So I can remember when I was about 9, sitting on her couch and being her debating eternal security, you know, and all of the different points of that and stuff. And she was like, you think these Christians that are going to bars are going to heaven, you know? And I would say, well, the Bible says you can't, no one can pluck them out of his hand. And we go back and forth, you know. And my dad would just skin my knees, man, just dragging me around to all of his meetings, and I would fall asleep in his office listening to him talk to people, and it was just a part of my everyday life. And I knew from the very beginning that this was what I was going to do. I never had any question about that. From the moment I got saved, I knew that I was going to be a preacher of some kind, and it was what I always prepared to do my whole life. And yet, when I arrived on the mission field, I felt so unprepared, which was a shock. You know, I really thought, you know, I'm ready to go. I want to do this so bad. And when I got onto the mission field, I felt just so unprepared. Because when you walk out of your door, like on a Monday morning, and you're supposed to like start a church, like out of nothing. I mean, there's just nothing there. You know what I'm talking about. There's just nothing there. And you're supposed to like start something and make something magically appear. And you've got, you know, millions of people walking around you that seem like decent people. And you just have no idea what you're doing. And you can't tell anybody that you don't know what you're doing, because you're a missionary, so you're supposed to know all the answers. You know, you've gone to school for, you know, how many years that I went to school and prepared, and you do ministry, and you preach messages, and you tell everybody how to do it, and then you actually leave, and you go to the mission field, and you get there, and you're like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And so I talked to Missy, and she's like, I've actually known that for a long time, Brian. You don't know what you're doing. I'm just glad that you're catching up. So that was a real encouragement. And so I start reading every book I can get my hands on to figure out how to start a church. And so those were really no help, because the church planting books are pretty much all the same. They're saying, okay, so you take like about 30 to 50 people, you know, you rent out a building, you get a website, you put up a sign, you get a catchphrase, you get the t-shirts, you know, and you get like philosophy of ministry, and you put that on the website, then you gotta pass out stuff and tell everybody, and all those 30 to 50 people get all their friends and family so that you can have a big launch service, and then you launch it in the community, let everyone know that you're gonna be there, and you have the seven touches for every person that comes, you know, on the first Sunday, so that you can get them to come back, and you have your assimilation process to get them to stick, and they've got every single bit of that worked out for you, which sounds like a good plan, but I was like, where do you get 30 people? You know, I was like, I don't know, is there like a 30 people store? And fine, it's me and my wife, and she doesn't even like my preaching. She's only there by law, because she's married to me, and now I've moved her to a different country. And so I've really got her, right? I mean, there's really nothing she can do. So I don't know where you get 30 people from. And pretty much every church planting book, which I read dozens, pretty much that was the basic idea. So they were of almost no use. Now, if I would have had 30 people, then there probably would have been some good stuff in there. So I don't want to badmouth those books or suggest that you don't read them. I think you should read everything. But so I started going to the church planting seminars, and those were actually a little bit more help, because then I would listen to the guys get up and talk, and then I would realize they don't know what they're doing either. And I thought, well, that's actually comforting, because at least I'm not the only one. And that was kind of like a light bulb went on at that point, because I realized nobody knows what they're doing. That space in there from 0 to 30, there's literally just no science for that. There's no plan. There's no kind of particular approach. It's just, you know, you got to win someone to Christ, you know. And that's really always what it comes down to, is whether or not you can reproduce yourself. And when you get on the mission field, that becomes so glaringly obvious that that really is the dividing line, is whether or not you can win someone to Christ, whether or not you can reproduce yourself. I was talking to this guy one time. I'm sorry, am I rambling? Is this okay? I'm sorry, but I'm just kind of saying what's on my mind. I've got some notes here, which I'm not sticking to, but I had this guy come up to me, and he was like, this is my plan. We're going to take over this church that has a few people, and they've got a building, and we're going to take that over and kind of start that way. And I said, that's great, man. You do you. Whatever you want to do, man, I'm behind you. You know, you just go and do great. And I said, but just remember this. I said, whenever you get the building painted and you get the website and you you get the praise team on the stage, and you get the, you know, the video stuff that you're going to do for the kids, and you know, all that stuff is wonderful. Use everything that you can. It's great. But once you get all that stuff set up and you're holding services, just realize you haven't actually done anything yet. Don't think that because you have all that stuff that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. Okay? Because the reason why we're here is to make disciples. And until you lead someone to Christ, until you disciple someone, you haven't moved the needle at all. We're just, because at that point, we're just moving people around, right? From one building to the next. And that's not what we're here to do. And we're not just here to have meetings. We're not just here to fill seats and fill buildings. We're here to multiply. So until you actually have someone repent and accept Jesus Christ as their Savior, and until you've discipled someone so that they know how to do that, you haven't actually moved forward at all yet. So as long as you keep that in mind, then I say, knock yourself out. Do everything that you think you need to do, man, to hold service, because that stuff's not bad or wrong. I think you should do all of it. That's fine. But we just have to keep in mind, you know, what it is that really moves the needle forward. You follow me? And that's always going to be the dividing line, whether or not you can reproduce yourself or not. And that is just, no matter where you live, is extremely hard. You guys know this, right? If you were to go out tomorrow and say, man, I want to try to lead someone to Christ, that takes time. It's hard. It's scary. And so it really is daunting, especially because we chose not to do it that route. We chose to start in our house, and we wanted to let the disciples we made kind of dictate where we went. We wanted to build our church on making disciples. And so trying to lead someone to Christ was extremely, extremely hard. And so the things that, these were some of the things that confronted us when we first moved there. But there were a whole lot of joys in what we were doing too. Even though it was really scary and it was really difficult, there was a whole lot of joy in what we were doing. I remember one time because I was just trying anything to get someone to talk to me in the beginning. So I took, there was a bus stop right outside of our house, and I took the stand and I put a coffee maker on it, you know, and I put coffee, and I put a sign that said free coffee. And I thought, when people come to get on the bus, I'll try to give away free coffee, and maybe I can strike up a conversation with someone. And I know what you're thinking right now. You're thinking, that's really stupid. And you're right, man, it was such a bad idea. But my motto at that time was, a bad idea is better than no idea, and which is not a good motto, but it's what I was doing at the time. And so, and there was a little news agent right there, and people were walking around me and going in the news agent and buying coffee to avoid me, and then getting on the bus right beside me. And I had free coffee right there. It was a sign and everything. And one guy was my neighbor. He came over and he knew me, and he got a cup of coffee and he said thanks, and then he just walked off. And that was the only person that spoke to me, was that guy. And the cherry on the top was that I looked over at my house and my wife is standing in the window, and she's like, I come inside, she's like, what are you doing, man? I gotta live around here, you know? So, yeah, that was wonderful. My wife, she takes so much pleasure in my pain. My wife does. She is great. Okay, there's one story I want to tell you. One time in one of the apartments we had like an iron staircase in the apartment, and I was carrying a bunch of stuff. So here's what I was going to do. I was carrying a bunch of stuff downstairs into the basement, and it was an iron staircase, and so I thought, yeah, I'll do it in my socks. Because that makes sense, right? And so I had like a jam box and like some boxes and some books and stuff, and barely even see. So I'm going to walk, you know, I'm not going to take several trips. I'm going to take it all at one time. So I start walking, and of course, my feet fly out from underneath me once I hit the stairs. And so I'm like bing bong down the steps, right? I'm just bouncing all over the place. And it was only because my knee caught on one of the bars that it stopped me about halfway down. So I'm just laying there in the middle of this iron staircase, just like, I mean, I'm just like in so much pain. It hurts so bad, okay? just imagine how bad that must have felt, and it was worse. And so I finally managed to turn over, and I climb up on all fours. I climb up to level ground again. So I'm just like barely bringing myself up. And I look over, and my wife has her face buried in a cushion on the couch, trying to muffle the laughter. She's laughing so hard, and I looked at her, and I was like, what is wrong with you that you are taking so much pleasure in this? And she says, well, I looked to see if you were okay first. I said, so you looked at me like this on the iron staircase, and you thought, he's good. She's so deceptive, my wife. And she's like, she looks so sweet. She never ages. I think she's a witch. She never ages. And I asked her, I was like, what is the deal? Okay? And she's like, I eat right and I exercise. You might try it. So she never ages, but she looks so sweet, but she's really dark and twisted inside. But there are so many wonderful joys like that. That wasn't a joy at the time, but it's a joy now because we have to talk about it. And she just cackles to this day when she thinks about it. And still, man, if she ever sees me fall, just forget about it. She's going to be out of commission for at least a minute and a half. She loves it. But there are so many great joys. One of the greatest joys was when I was on the high street and I met this guy named Jamal and his fiance at the time named Sakili. They're married now. And he was, some of you probably have heard this story before, so forgive me, but he was an atheist at the time, and so I asked him, I said, man, you want to grab some coffee? But at some point in this week, I want to talk about our approach to evangelism, so I won't bore you with too many details, but I said, do you want to get some coffee and talk to me about the gospel? And he was like, sure, you know, I'll do that. So we met, and he didn't even tell me until the third meeting that he doesn't drink coffee. He doesn't like coffee, but he met with me. And so I was just witnessing to him, and he was like, you know, at the end of it, he'd be like, listen, I appreciate it, but I don't believe in any of this stuff. And I was like, okay, do you want to meet again? And he was like, sure. And so we met again, and I went through the gospel every which way I could think of it, you know, and he was like, man, I appreciate you taking your time and everything. He's like trying to let me off easy, you know, and it's like he was trying to convince someone that he didn't want to go out with them anymore, you know. It's like, I really appreciate it. It's not you, it's me. But I just don't believe in this stuff, you know. And I'm like, cool, okay, would you like to meet again? And he's like, sure. And so we met again. We did this like six times. We met like six times. And he was, he finally came to church. We'd already led his fiance to Christ by this point, and me and Mindy did. And so she drug him to church one Sunday. He came up afterwards, he's like, you know, that was really good. It really made a lot of sense to me. He says, it was really great. I appreciate you having me and everything. He says, I gotta go, I gotta get the train. And I was like, all right. And so I was there cleaning up, and I was all by myself, and just sweeping up. And I can remember this to this day, and I got a text. And he told me later what had happened. He was standing on the train platform, waiting for his train, and he said, I can't explain it. He says, but just something came over me while I was standing there, and I just knew that everything you had been telling me was absolutely true. And he texted me, I got it, while I was sweeping up the floor, and it said, I'm ready to submit and join Jesus. And he didn't even know how to say it. I mean, he was completely, like, unchurched, you know, and which I actually think the way he said it's pretty good. And he's like, I'm ready to join Jesus. And he got saved, and we discipled him and his wife, and they actually ended up moving away. It's what all the good people do, right? All the good people, you know, they always end up moving away. And God will judge those people. No, I'm kidding. But he lives in Vermont now with his wife, Sakili, and I spent about a year and a half discipling them. And now they have their own evangelistic ministry where they're going out on the street and sharing the gospel with people in Vermont where they live. And he's got his own YouTube channel where he talks about it and stuff and confronts people about Jesus. And it just makes my heart feel so good to see him doing that. And he actually had me as a guest on his YouTube channel. And yeah, he had like, he had a few people follow him at the time, and which was just so awesome. I'm just so proud of Jamal and Sakili. They're just great people. And those, see, that's the good stuff. That's the stuff that really keeps you going when you see people come to Christ, and then you see them take that, and you can see that it's really for real. You know, as Pops would always say, you know, he got saved good. Some people do get saved good. And the other real joy is Paul and Emma. I was out taking a walk one time, and I also got this from Pops. He used to always pray while he would walk. And so I do that sometimes. I don't always do that. And I don't do anything consistently. I do a lot of different things. But I was out praying and walking, and I just sat down on this bench, and I was really praying over John chapter 14, 13, and 14, you know, where he's like, if you ask anything in my name, then I'll give it to you. Whatever you ask, I'll give you if you can pray it in my name. And so that the Father can be glorified in the Son. And so I was just really praying over that and praying that word back to him and saying, you know, if this is true, then I'll tell you what I want. I want a disciple. I want a disciple that really gets it. You know, I don't want just a disciple. I mean, it's always, you know, cool to take people through the lessons. You don't ever know how it's going to work out with some people, but I just really want someone, I said, who's really going to get it. Who's going to catch what it is that we're trying to do here. And I was really honest. And anyway, 1 week from that day, Paul and Emma Waller walked in the front door of our church. And a friend, they had tried out this other church and they didn't like it, and they just felt miserable. He said he felt directionless in his life. And a friend of his said, you know, you should try this guy's church over here named Brian. And they came walking into the church, and I started discipling them. And I've been training him for about the last 6 years, and he's getting ready to get ordained on November 28th to be the next pastor of our church. And and that happened not because of any clever technique that I had, you know? And a lot of people do have clever techniques, and I think that's really awesome. I just don't happen to be very clever. And so, but I didn't have any particular technique. That happened as an answer to prayer. I was just praying, and God honored his word, and he gave me a disciple who gets it. And those people have been such a joy to see them growing. And as we went through discipleship, and I never talked to him about the ministry or nothing. I was just so happy that someone was going to make it through the lessons and was going to, you know, go all the way. And that was just going to be a real success. And he came to my house and he's like, you know, I think God is calling me into the ministry. And oh, I just about stripped naked at the time when he told me that. And he told me that was unnecessary, and, but I just felt like, man, I almost just turned charismatic. And so we started training them, and it's just such a joy. Whenever times get really hard, you know, me and Mindy will remind each other, we'd be like, you know, remember Paul and Emma. We just keep them in mind, you know, like that's the reason God brought us here, was for these people. And so there are some real joys. The High Street, which is what they call like Main Street in London, and we have a huge High Street right by our house. And that's kind of where God, kind of kicking and screaming, really pushed me out there to start sharing the gospel with people. Because I was trying everything I could to get into conversations with people, and that's kind of where he pushed me, was out to the High Street. And the High Street for me was the best university that I ever attended. And I attended several of them. And this was the best education in ministry that I ever had anywhere. Was being on the High Street. You get to talk with so many different kinds of people. You get to have so many different kinds of conversations. And I am not an extroverted person. I really am not. My entire life, okay, I have been very shy. And people that know me know that, you know, when I'm like this, the bigger the crowd is, the more comfortable I feel. But if it's like one-on-one, then it's hard to not just look at the ground because I'm really shy. I'm not an extroverted person. And so when God was like, you need to go out on the high street and start sharing the gospel, I was like, no, I don't think I can do that. That's really silly. And so I ended up doing that, and man, it took me forever just to talk to one person. For the first 15 minutes, I would just look at the ground, be praying, and just praying that it would like start raining so I could go home. That's no joke. I would pray for it to rain so that I could go home, so I would have an excuse to leave. And I'd pray for strength to be able to talk to someone, and I started passing out tracts and putting things in people's hands. And I actually got pretty good at that. And I was putting stuff in people's hands that didn't even want it, you know, when they would walk past. And I'd find a way to put it in their hand. And I was thinking, that's really cool. But God convicted me, and he's like, it's not what I told you to do. You know, you're supposed to be talking to people. And little by little, I started talking to people and witnessing to them. And eventually started seeing some people get saved. And it was the most remarkable thing. I mean, you can go, I went to seminary, and I went to shepherd school, and worked at churches, worked on staff, and was in the ministry for a long time before I ever came to London, and yet was really a beginner when it came to just sharing the gospel with somebody. And I had to really learn from the beginning how to do that. And I did that for a long time before we have anybody. So you're just out there kind of day after day doing that for years, trying to win someone to the Lord. And that was probably the most hilarious and demoralizing place was on the high street. But it completely changed my life, it completely changed my ministry, and it completely changed our philosophy as to how we do what we do. It can be really funny, the high street. I remember we started this thing called the campaign, where we'd have teams from the States come out. We train them how we do what we do on the high street. And we'd take them out there and we just kind of let them loose to do it. And sometimes it'd be so funny just listening to the people share the gospel. Because I've already been through all the fears that they're going through. And so I get to now laugh at them while they're going through it. And so this one guy, he's just a classic. I won't say his name because I won't embarrass him. But he was talking with this guy, and he was telling him, man, there's nothing you could ever do, right? That makes you, you know, too far away from God's grace. You guys know the lines, right? And you're just nothing, you can't run too far to get out of God's reach and all this kind of stuff. And the guy says to him in response, he says, well, that's because you don't know what I did this weekend. And the guy's like, oh. And the guy proceeded to tell him what he did that weekend. And this guy responded by saying, yeah, that's pretty bad. And the guy walked off, and the guy kind of caught himself. He's like, oh, no. And the guy was gone, and I'm just practically on the floor. I'm just like, man, it's awesome. It's good stuff, man. He was like, I didn't know. It's cool, man. It's the way it goes. You know? Just roll with it, brother. And it was just so fantastic. And then he was so stunned. But with this guy, when he was explaining what he did that weekend, he was, you know, he kind of came from like, you know, middle America, and he was pretty, you know, he's just such a good guy, right? Real straight-laced, good guy, classically good guy. And he was just so stunned by what this guy said. He was like, yeah, that's pretty bad. And so it can be such a hilarious place. But I'll tell you another thing, just to switch topics a little bit. Another thing that really keeps us going is our kids. We've got four of them. And, okay, so our kids, we've got four of them, and Madison, and Hudson, and Caitlin, and Stefan. And they, they are just a gift from God. They're just the most wonderful kids. They really are. And I was telling this guy, I was like, you know how they always say that you always get repaid, you know, for your wickedness with your kids. You know, you sow all your wild oats and then you have kids and then you get it back. And I was like, that's not true, because I was terrible as a kid. And my kids are just an absolute dream. And they're like, no, that's Mindy getting paid back. That's what they said. That's Mindy getting paid back. But they are an absolute dream. They are so sweet and they're responsible. They love the Lord and they just are such a help in ministry. And I know it doesn't always work out that way. And I don't mean to like brag about my kids or whatever, but I can't help it. I just love them and I just want to squeeze them till they pop. They are just the most wonderful kids. And I think that was such a grace from God to us on the field, because it is such a battle consistently that our kids have just been such a joy to us. And Madison, from the time she was little, I remember her sitting down. She was just in primary school and talking to me about, like, you know, why do you share the gospel? I was trying to explain, you know, that, and, you know, Jesus is coming back soon, you know? So it's like we live in a train station, right? That's what I explained it to her. The world is a train station, and nobody stays in a train station. A train station's temporary. And you're just there until the train comes. You're waiting on the train to come. And I said, we have to tell everyone so they can get on the train or else they're going to miss it. And she was like, we got to tell everybody that, you know. She's so little. And we went to the park a little later that week, and we're out there trying to help the kids. And I look over, and she's sharing that she had a little gospel cube. One of those little gospel cubes, and she's over there sharing it with this adult couple sitting on the bench. She's walking them through the gospel cube, sharing the gospel with them. And I was doing some work for this semi-pro football team at the time. I was their chaplain, and she came along with me. And so we went back in the locker room and stuff, and I would do like a Bible talk. And so she asked me if she could do it that time. So I had her stand up on this little thing, and she explained the gospel to all these footballers. And they just thought it was awesome. And she did it so good. I mean, she explained the gospel so good. And she would go out on the high street with me, and the other kids would come out on the high street all the way from Hudson, and Caitlin and Stefan, they would go out there and share the gospel with people on the high street. And they were just such a joy. And to see them in their private life, you know, take a stand for the gospel, just, it's just wonderful. I really just don't have a negative word to say about them, except for the fact that Hudson is bigger than I am now, and I'm really not liking that whatsoever. I was always the biggest guy in the house, and now he's like an inch taller than me, and it's a whole thing. So I don't really care for that, but they are so funny. But to kind of give you an opposite side of that, if you turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 5, 2 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 5, this is what the Apostle Paul said, who was, you know, also a church planter. So he's kind of, you know, I know that we follow Jesus, but as far as other than Christ himself, I mean, he's the guy that I follow in the scriptures. I look at what the Apostle Paul says. I try to do what the Apostle Paul does. And he said this, he said, for when we were come into Macedonia, our flesh had no rest. And Macedonia is close to my heart, obviously, because it's the first time that the gospel crossed over to Europe at that time, which is kind of my playground. And so when he crossed over into Macedonia, he said, our flesh had no rest, but we were troubled on every side, without were fightings, and within were fears. And that verse right there, that's just to give you an idea of what it's like, that's our default mode. That's like the default mode at the Clark House. There's always a fight, and then there's always wrestlings inside. There's always fightings without and fears within. It's just kind of the default mode. Whenever I get to come and do something like this, And I've had a couple people say to me, man, we really appreciate the sacrifice of you coming, and you guys don't even understand. This is such a breath of fresh air to me. My family hate me right now, because I get this breath of fresh air, and they don't. But this is a relief. And every time when we do leave the city, we can feel it fall off of us. But this is the default mode that we live with. And I don't say that to glorify what we go through. I'm just saying that that is the way that it is. There's always spiritual warfare that is going on. And spiritual warfare is probably the scariest part of what we deal with, and probably the most difficult thing to deal with. Because when it's spiritual warfare, you can't even necessarily identify it as that in the beginning. You don't always know that it's that. But it just weighs you down. Like right now, as we're preparing to turn this church over to Paul Waller, this is supposed to be a time that's like really joyful. And it is. There's a lot of joy. And I beam when I see him preaching and stuff, and that's great. But it's kind of like having a baby, right? You know, it's right before the baby pops out. That's the time that hurts the most, right? That's when you have the most pains, I'm assuming. I don't know for sure, but I'm assuming that that's when it's the worst. You know, you go through that ring of fire or whatever, and it's like really bad. You know, sorry, is that too specific? But you go through that, and it's really painful. I was in the birthing classes, okay? I heard about that stuff. And so, yeah, that reminds me of a story. So there is this time, he's our first child, Madison, and Mindy, she's in the stirrups, you know, and she's trying to, and they had given her epidural too late and killed her contractions, and it was a whole thing. And so she's trying to get this kid out, right? And so she's starting to crown, and the doctor tells me, he says, hey, you know, come take a look at this. So me and the doctor both come alongside by each foot. So we're just kind of just examining what's going on, right? So he's looking and I'm looking, and he's like, see, that's the head right there. And I was like, that's never gonna come out of it. That's what I said to him. And Mindy is like, she's like, would you shut up? She said, you're not helping. Come back up here. She made me go back up to the top. But she finally pushed the puppy out, man. She finally did it. And it took all night, but she finally got it out. And so the doctor gives me Madison, and she's got this written down in the baby book, okay? This is not an embellishment. And she's laying back. She's so exhausted. She's like, what does she look like? And I'm holding her, and I said, she looks like Mr. Miyagi. She did, man. She looked just like Mr. Miyagi. But it's that moment before the baby comes out is like, that's the most painful time, you know? Even though you're so looking forward to this beautiful baby to be born, but it's also a very excruciating time. All the ladies can attest to that. And so right now, the whole situation there is very intense, you know? And the spiritual warfare is intense. And it's like, there are some days where I feel, physically on my body, it just feels, everything feels so heavy. And it's just like everything I can do to like get out of bed, it's like I have to drag myself everywhere that I go. And I'm not tired, you know? I'm not tired, and we eat pretty healthy. Mindy makes sure that we do. And I love coming here just because I get to drink Coke. You know, she doesn't allow it in the house. And so I get to drink Coke, and it's wonderful. But I eat healthy, and I sleep good, and I'm not tired. But it's just like have to work so hard to just lift your arms to work. And it just weighs on you, and it's just a little thing here and there every single day. I mean, you guys know what I'm talking about. Mike, you know what I'm talking about. It's always something. And the spiritual warfare that you deal with is not just problems with people, even though it involves people, but it's even when you're alone. Just the way that you have to wrestle, you know. I'm not saying I'm like wrestling with the devil, but you wrestle with something, you're wrestling with something, you know. And it's so intense at times that it messes with your mind, it messes with your relationships, and it steals your joy, and it just, it's remarkably awful. It really is. And but it's just part of the deal. It really does weigh you down. The truth is, all I ever wanted to do was to plant a Philippians 1:27 type church. So turn over to that verse. Philippians 1:27. Paul here says, "Only let your conversation be as it becometh the gospel of Christ, that whether I come and see you, or else be absent, I may hear of your affairs, that you stand fast in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel." That's always the kind of church that I wanted to plant. Always. I wanted to have a church where you had just a unit of people that were tight. They were really tight. Don't you want that? Don't you feel like you want that? That to have a group of people that you're tight with? I never cared about the numbers thing. In fact, you know, the numbers is fine. If you have a lot of people, I mean, Peter had 3,000 get saved. You know, I'm not against numbers. But the numbers were never really a big thing for me. What I really wanted was the tightness with people. I wanted to be tight with a unit of people that you were just striving together with them in this battle that we're in, striving together for the faith of the gospel. And I felt like that you could handle almost any battle when you know that when you have a squad of believers that you know have your back. That's what I always wanted. That was the kind of church that I wanted to plant. It's kind of the church that that's the kind of church I would like to attend, you know. And I felt like whatever happens in the battle, you could handle it. If you knew you had like a squad of guys and sisters in Christ, if you knew that they had your back, then you were going to be all right. You were going to be fine. And that's always what I wanted. And it doesn't always work out like that. And sometimes, no matter how many hours you spend counseling, how many hours you spend discipling, and all the time you spend investing, and sometimes those are the very people that end up, you know, jacking everything up. And that's always heartbreaking, isn't it? But that's still always what I'm striving for. Is I just want a squad of people that you just know they would lay down in front of a truck for you, and that you would do the same for them. You know, I don't know why we can't do that. I don't know why we can't be like that. You know what I'm saying? I just don't understand it. I don't understand why we can't have that. I mean, we have the people, we have the faith, we have the scriptures, we all believe it, you know? What makes a church is not that we believe in Jesus. What makes a church is that we've all decided we want to believe in Jesus together.
Yeah. Amen.
To do it together. That's what I want. That's the reason why I want to plant churches, because God called me to do that. That's the kind of churches that I want to plant. But I can honestly say that I wouldn't be able to do it if it wasn't for my wife. And I know that's cliche, and you know, she would hate it if she was here and I said that. And she gets mad at me because I, you know, compliment her too much. So I've stopped doing that. and see how she likes it then, right? And which is not true. And I compliment her relentlessly all the time, you know, at the house. And she just doesn't even hear me anymore. You know, I tell her that I think she's beautiful. She's like, whatever, okay, I got stuff to do. And she's just a tremendous lady. She really is. She's a first class lady. But she's also really high maintenance. She's a very high maintenance woman. Her and my daughter Caitlin, both very high maintenance. And you guys, if you're watching this, you know it's true, okay? And my daughter Caitlin, okay, she's gonna kill me if I tell you the story, but she is so high maintenance. I was trying to convince her that she needed to eat this. It was the only cereal we had, okay? It's called Fruit and Fiber. Anybody ever eaten that? Yeah, it's gross. It's terrible, okay? But it's the only cereal we had, and I was like, just look, sweetie, okay? I'm sorry, okay? But just eat it, please, today. Do that for your dad. And she sat there, and she just looked at me with these daggers, right? And she looked out, and she's like, oh, all right. She says, I will eat the cereal, but I will need you to remove the raisins first. Okay? These are the women in my house. This is what I'm dealing with, guys. Okay? Now, cut to me 10 minutes later, picking out raisins. I'm doing it, you know? We're getting ready to take a trip, and it's like really hot for us in London, which means it's like 65 degrees outside. And Caitlin's like, listen, I'm gonna need you to go out about 30 minutes ahead of time and turn on the air conditioning to get it cool for me if I'm gonna ride in this heat. And I'm like, I don't know where she gets it. Well, she gets it from her mom. But they are very high maintenance ladies, but they kind of deserve to be because they're pretty special and they are really sweet. But it's also, that's kind of a hardship because when you watch them, you know, go, this stuff takes a toll on Mindy. And when you watch her go through this stuff, and she's such a good mom, you know, I act like these kids are wonderful, like it's a big surprise, but she's such a good mom, and she really takes care of the house, and she takes care of me. And sometimes I talk to her, and I'm like, you know, I'm not exactly sure what I bring to the table in this relationship, because she kind of does everything. And she's really awesome, but it's so difficult to see her go through this. And I look at her and I think she just deserves so much more. And I feel kind of guilty sometimes. Sometimes I wonder, you know, what the heck have I done to my family that I brought them to this place? And, but it's what it is. So the 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 13 is kind of what keeps me going. Now, I'm just about finished. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, let me get there. Verse 13, Paul says to this church, he says, to the end that he may establish your hearts unblameable in holiness before God, unblameable in holiness before God, even our Father, at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ with all his saints. That's one of the verses that really keeps me going, because whenever the Lord returns and I have to stand before him, I just want him to think that I did a good job. I just want to be able to stand before him with confidence and be blameless before him, and for him to say, hey, you did it. You did just fine. If that's what I get, I'd be like, thank God, you know? And that's all that I really want, is for him to be able to think, because the idea that he doesn't think that I'm doing the job, or that I'm doing it well enough, or that I'm doing it good, that weighs on me. And that's what really keeps me going through this. That, if you go over to Revelation chapter 3, verse 11, this verse as well. Revelation 3, verse 11. He said to the Philadelphia church, he said, behold, I come quickly. He says, hold that fast which thou hast, that no man take thy crown. That's what another verse that really helps keep me going is because, again, it really has to do with the judgment seat, and I just want to win that crown. And I just have to hold on, you know? I just have to hold on until the end, because we know he's coming soon, and it's almost over. And I'm like, guys, listen, don't let go now. You know, it's almost over. You got to hold on to the end. Hold fast to what you've been given. And don't let anything come in your life that's going to wreck all of your rewards. You know, now is not the time to let go. Now is the time to hold on. So if you want to write something down, and then we're done, here's the thing that I found that just really matter. These are not sermon points. This is just from me to you. These are things that I found over time that really matter. After showing up on the mission field as this bright-eyed, kind of naive kid 21 years ago, and then going through the stuff that, you know, we've gone through and all of that with the successes and the great failures and all of that stuff, here's three things that I found really, really matter. One is honor the Lord. No matter what happens in your life, no matter what you do, no matter where you are, just honor the Lord. That's got to be priority number one in everything you do. Just honor him. Whatever you get faced with, that should be your guide. I'm going to honor the Lord in this thing, in this decision, in this moment, with this person, whatever it is. I don't care if it's taking a test. I don't care if it's your job, mission field, whatever it is. Just honor the Lord. That really matters. That should really be all that matters. Number two is stay true to his word. Stay true to his word. And again, that applies to any circumstances that you're in. Just do not ever purposely in your life deviate from his word. And number three is love your brother. Love your brother and your sister. That's implied. Love your brother and your sister. Love them as much as you can. Those three things, if you do those three things, man, you're going to have a pretty good life. I think you're going to have a life that really matters. Honor the Lord, stay true to his word, and love your brother. Because honestly, everything else is just an Instagram post. That's the stuff that really matters. Let's pray. Father, Lord, I want to thank you so much for this church and just for their patience to put up with my rambling, and that they would even care. They're just the coolest bunch of people, Lord. And I just pray that you would put your hand upon them right now. And I pray, Lord, that you would let your face shine upon them. That you would bless them. I pray, Lord, that you would bring great peace into their body, into their relationships, into their hearts. That you would bring such mercy from your throne right into their lives and into their church. That you would bring such grace into their life and into all of their relationships, into their ministries. I just pray, Lord, that you would bring these things down upon them, that you would open up the windows of heaven and pour it down upon them, Lord. I pray that you would continue to use this church to reach new people for your son, Jesus Christ, that we would see more disciples made, that we would see this place multiply, not because we are interested in numbers, but because we want to see you glorified through the multiplication of disciples. I pray, Lord, for this church, that we would see missionaries called to the mission field who would stand up and say, yes, I want to go and do there what I'm doing here.
I want to reproduce not just other believers, I want to reproduce other churches. I pray, Lord, that you would raise up men who would be great Bible teachers, that you would raise up women who would be great Bible teachers, that you would raise up men and women who would be great soul winners and ministers and music ministers and children's ministers. And Lord, I pray that you would raise up people that not only know the word, but that can teach the word to others. Continue, Lord, to bless this place. I pray that you put your hand upon Mike and Becky. And I pray, Lord, that you would bless them. I pray, Lord, that you would heal them, that you would refresh their spirit, that you would give them a new sense of energy, that you would make their steps feel lighter instead of heavier. I pray, Lord, that in their lives, as well as others, that you would give them a squad of brothers and sisters that they can strive for the faith of the gospel with, and they just know that they've got each other's back. I pray this in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.